Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. This is the Doctor number 14, and you've reached the Best SF Show, March 30th, 2015 edition. We were going to be starting up at 1 p.m. today, but we had, unfortunately, a small problem. I had spilled some water on my laptop, and I was very worried about it getting into the gut, the water, the liquid. But fortunately, I dried everything up, and I'm working on the laptop, and everything is okay. So we are fine. So we are going to be talking about 14 shows, including Pretty Little Liars, the finale episode to season 5, Welcome to the Dollhouse, episode 525, and it really picked up in the ratings from a 0.9 to a 1.3 with 2.64 million viewers. It didn't do quite as well as season 4. Which was 3 million, close to 3 million. But it did pick up because people are curious to know what is happening to the Pretty Little Liars. And a lot. I see this almost like a lost episode. Maybe a little bit too late, but it probably was the most sci-fi-ish of the bunch. So let's play our theme song and review it.
Not a secret, can you keep it? Swear this one you say. Better lock it in your pocket, taking this one to the grave. There's a showman that I know you won't tell what I said. Cause two can keep a secret if one of them is dead.
So, someone takes the liars who are on a prison transport vehicle. They stop the vehicle. The girls are gassed. When they awaken, they're in separate bedrooms. And then they are welcomed by this computerized voice. The door is open, and they have to follow this lighted path. And they go to this room where it's none other than Mona with blonde hair who's pretending to be Allison, who serves them tea. And later on that evening, I guess when the generators go down for 3 minutes, Mona reveals her identity and tells her she doesn't know what's going on either, but that they're planning a prom. And so as they proceed, the liars put on dresses, the prom starts, and there's all these mannequins on the floor, except one is a human, and Mona / Allison is the prom queen. And basically, a human walks up to one of them. They deduce it's Charles. I don't know. They reversed and played around with the letters on these little kid blocks. Baby blocks, and it spelled out Charles, so they call out to Charles. But basically, they're able to shut the power off and the liars escape, and they realize they can't get out because as they get out of the place, the entire gate is electrified, and they're in the deep woods someplace, so they can't get out, and that's how it ends. Very sci-fi-ish in terms of its inception, in terms of the prison of the liars and who is behind it. But now the detective knows because basically Caleb was able with his computer skills to track the van's location that took the liars, and they traced it to the old Campbell farm, and they find A's lair, and the detective looks at the monitors and she sees the girls on it, so they need to find the place where they were taken. So even she is now thinking that it's a bigger plot than what they first thought of. Okay, so now this brings us to the Sunday night lineup, last Sunday night lineup, not this past one. So we won't be reviewing The Walking Dead season finale or how Maleficent basically lost her child to evil, but instead, the Once Upon a Time episode from one past week ago, Poor Unfortunate Soul, episode 416, and then The Walking Dead, the penultimate episode before the season finale, 515, Try. So on Once Upon a Time, Poor Unfortunate Soul, it did pick up a little bit in the ratings from a 1.8 to a 1.9 with 5.79 million viewers. And basically we find out the story between Hook and Ursula, that basically Ursula, little Ursula, let Captain Hook's ship go, and Poseidon, her father, wanted her to avenge his wife's death at by one of the humans, to subjugate all the humans to death. And basically Ursula was using her siren song to lure Hook to the rocks, but then she decided not to. So basically what happens is Poseidon threatens Hook because Hook sees Ursula singing in the bar, and she has stolen a bracelet from her father that makes her walk on land, and she wants to be taken to a new land. And Poseidon threatens Hook and does not want her going on the Jolly Roger. And so he enchants a shell that will take her voice away, and he will offer him the magic to subdue Rumpel, namely give him the squid ink to subdue Rumpelstiltskin, which is his major goal, if you will, his quest, if he takes Ursula's voice away. And so Hook tells Ursula what Poseidon has planned and wants Ursula to steal the squid ink from the father. Ursula does get the squid ink, but then Poseidon takes the ink, and in retaliation, which didn't make much sense, Hook robs Ursula of her voice with the shell, and she dives into the waters. And then Ursula uses Poseidon's trident to give her tentacles that she looks like she is in her present form. Meanwhile, Regina is going to burn August unless he reveals the, in the present timeline, unless he reveals the information on the author. And Regina possesses Snow at one point and tells them Gold is back, and now they know he also has the dagger too. And Hook is going to contact Ursula, and he's going to give her back her happy ending, which we will find out in a little bit. And so they make a deal, and Ursula brings up a tiny figure of a Jolly Roger from the portal in the bottle. And basically, while this is going on, Rumpelstiltskin gives August a liquid to make him a puppet again. Then he changes back, but his nose gets longer every time he lies. So Rumpel wants to know where the author is, and Argus tells him that the author is trapped behind a door, and the door is in Storybrooke, so Rumpelstiltskin is going to check out the Sorcerer's Mansion. Meanwhile, Ursula makes the Jolly Roger big again, and the shell is inside the ship. So Hook gives Ursula the shell that restores her voice, but it doesn't, because someone magical has got to basically break the curse. So she throws him overboard, but fortunately the mermaid saves him, Ariel. And as this is going on, Emma, David, and Mary Margaret free August, but Ursula is about to choke Mary Margaret, and then Hook is able to bring Poseidon with Ariel's help to Ursula. He reactivates the shell and returns Ursula's voice. They hug, and Hook says that was his happy ending, and that his happy ending is with Emma. And then Ursula reveals to them that Gold's plan involves Emma, that if she's the savior, the author can't give the villains their happy ending. So Emma is going to be filled with darkness by the Dark One, which is very sad. And then August says at the end of the episode that the illustration of the door is the real door, and the author is trapped in the Storybrooke book. Wow, lots of stuff happening. And a lot of stuff is happening on Once Upon a Time every week. So I really like this show a lot. Okay, this brings us to The Walking Dead, episode 515, Try, which matched its previous episode's outing of 7.0 with 13 1.757 million viewers. So let's play our Walking Dead theme song and then review that show. Here we go. So this leads up to the series finale where Rick is beginning to lose it, wants to shoot Jesse's husband, Pete, and Deanna disagrees with him, even though Pete has been beating his wife, Jesse. She won't kill anyone, but she will exile them instead. Meanwhile, Glenn confronts Nicholas, the one who panicked, who's really starting to lose it, and as we see in the finale episode, the guy really starts losing it a lot. So, as I said, this is setting up the conflict that will be resolved in the end episode. Meanwhile, Sasha goes on a zombie killing spree, and Michonne catches up with her. And Sasha says she wants to take on all of them, but needs to be saved by Michonne, but says she doesn't. But she says she doesn't need her help because she's still mourning for Noah. Meanwhile, Darrow and Aaron find cut-up body parts, and they find a dead girl tied to a tree that's been fed upon by the zombies. And she's a zombie, too, and Darrow kills her, but they have the strange W marks on their foreheads, which is also explained at the ending there. So Rick tells Jesse the abuse has to stop and that he's trying to help. So she tells him she's married and can take care of herself, but Rick doesn't want her to die, and all she has to do is say yes. And she does to his help, and then Pete comes in, and Jesse tells him to go. So Pete and Rick fight. Deanna tells him to stop it, and while he's bloodied, he threatens the others with the gun, and Michonne has no choice but to knock him out. So Rick is really losing it in this outing of The Walking Dead. Okay, this brings us now to the following, where they showed two episodes last week, episode 304, Home, and episode 305, A Hostile Witness. And it did improve in the ratings somewhat, from a 1.1 to a 1.3 for the first hour with 3.93 million, and a 1.2 in the second hour with 3.75 million. Still, not as good as Sleepy Hollow, obviously. And so that's why I think Sleepy Hollow was basically picked up for another season. So let us play our following theme song, and then we can basically review the two episodes of the following. Here we go. What happens is Daisy and Kyle, the team killers, basically, their place of residence is found by Max and Ryan. They find a cellar with bloody clothes on the mannequins, which are trophies of their kills. And then they find also more, well, what they try to do, Emily, a dog sitter, calls up the couple and says the dog was hit and they left her at the vet. So Ryan gets a chance to not only talk to Daisy and Kyle, but to Kyle too. And Kyle, the main leader of the serial killers, says he's planning to hit them hard. And so they race back. And Mark, Daisy, and Kyle has killed all firemen at the station, including Ryan's brother. And it's put in blood, heroes die while you lie, L-I-E. And so Max is taking it off pretty hard, and she calls Mike, and Daisy and Kyle have rigged the apartment so they can watch what she does. And Max said she should have been there to help Mike through it. They kiss and get intimate and sleep together. And meanwhile, her lover basically has been watching the incident with her, Max, getting intimate with Mike and doesn't like it. Meanwhile, the FBI find Daisy and Kyle exiting Mark's place. And so the FBI converge. Tom sees the laptop, as I said, plays the scene of Max having sex with Mike. Tom is Max's new boyfriend. But they search for Mark, and he's gone. And Daisy and Kyle watch the memorial for Reggie. Now, Reggie is the one they pushed into oncoming traffic where a truck killed him. And so now they're visiting Reggie's girlfriend in her dorm, Marisol. And they tie her up, and they're going to throw her off the roof. And Daisy hits Mike, and Ryan finds Kyle, and they're able to pull Mike up from, and he's hanging from the roof. And meanwhile, Kyle gets hit in the back but escapes. And Marisol is knifed. And so at the end, we find out she's taken to the hospital, that Judge Wallace, Marisol's mom, and it's really the trial of Strauss that Daisy and Kyle have targeted. So some of the motivation behind what Daisy and Kyle are doing are finally revealed in this episode. So in the second episode, A Hostile Witness, Hardy talks to Dr. Strauss, and the doctor says, "See you in court." And so basically, Carrie Cook is a reporter who Ryan was intimate with the previous year, who's going to testify against Strauss. Basically, Daisy gets Carrie Cook. And so the witness is missing. And so Ryan checks out the hotel where she is staying. And the place is clean, but Ryan smells bleach. And with his black light, it reveals blood. So it looks like Carrie is taken by Daisy and Kyle. So they track the van heading to the Old Navy Yard. Ryan arrives and sees the van in flames with Carrie inside. Kyle and Daisy escape. So Carrie has died. And Ryan is on the trail. Daisy gets over the fence, but Kyle is left behind. And Kyle comes at Ryan with a knife, and Ryan shoots him dead. Judge Wallace has dismissed the case, and Dr. Strauss walks. And Ryan has to connect Daisy to Strauss, or he, Mike, and Max will get suspended. So that's his goal. And meanwhile, Mark gets into Juliana's apartment, and she reveals that Daisy and Kyle were Strauss's students, and Mark is ready to burn her face with an iron, and Mark wants to know where Strauss is, or he's going to kill her. And Daisy sees Strauss and attacks him, but Strauss will either kill Daisy or she can leave the country with him. So she chooses to go with him on a Ukrainian cargo ship. But Ryan finds Strauss, and so does Mark, who starts shooting. So Max is able to restrain Strauss, but Daisy frees Strauss by hitting Max repeatedly with a 2x4 on her back. Mike injures Mark, and Mike is ready to shoot him, but Mark plunges into the waters. Meanwhile, Max is taken to the hospital. She'll make a full recovery. And then Joe is visited by Ryan and says, "What took you so long?" Because Joe Carroll was going to be the one that they were going to turn to help them find Dr. Strauss. So a lot of action happens on this show, definitely. So that was all pretty good. But like I said, without Joe Carroll's presence or a really strong serial killer, the serial killer Mark just doesn't do it. So I would not be at all surprised if the following continues to drop in the ratings and then is canceled. That is Dr. Number 14's prediction. Okay, this brings us to the Bates Motel and the return. The Bates Motel Persuasion, it received a 0.8 rating, the same as the last week, with 1.922 million viewers. So Norma is asked by Romero to identify Attica's body, but it's not her. It's someone else. And Romero needs to talk to Norman about the girl in the morgue to see if there's a connection between her and Attica. And Romero talks to Norman, and he shows Norman the picture of the dead girl, and he said he did not see that one, which is a very curious remark, that one. So who did he see? So Norman is mad at his mother, says she has the problem, not him, that he should not be pampering himself. Meanwhile, Emma takes marijuana plants and her bug in her Volkswagen to Dylan's place, and she meets Caleb, Dylan's uncle. And Dylan tells her not to tell anyone she saw Caleb. Okay, so the girl that was is identified as an escort, so she is related to Attica. Meanwhile, Romero is running for re-election, and he meets his opponent, Marcus Young, who's also running for sheriff. And then Norman tells Emma that he doesn't think his mother trusts him, and Norman starts losing it, and Emma tells him to calm down. And Norman says, it's her. And then Norman yells at his mom. He lifts the bed up and down, yelling he did not kill Attica. He did not black out that night. And Norma is upset by his behavior, but Norman is so full of rage. And an image of his mother appears asking if he killed Attica, and says he doesn't know because it's all a blur. And then his image of mother starts undressing him as she draws his bath. And then Norman goes under in the tub, and he's holding his breath. And then Norma breaks down the bathroom door and pulls Norman from the water and tells her, what if I did kill Attica? And so Norma is freaking out. And then at the end, a car comes to the motel, and Attica, and she doesn't look very well at all, returns and is bleeding, been shot, and she passes out. And Norma calls 911, believing that she's dead. Wow. A lot of stuff happening here on the Bates Motel. Keep checking in to that series, definitely. The Return, very similar to the French series, but I like the French series. It's just great without subtitles now. And I think all the cast are excellent in it. So episode 103, Julie, which received the same rating as the previous week, a 0.4 with 1.051 million viewers, we find out that Julie was also attacked in a tunnel on Halloween night and was stabbed by her attacker 7 years ago. So while this is going on, we find out that Lena, Camille's sister, has a strange scar on her back. And Camille points it out to her. Simon, meanwhile, is taken to the community center by its leader, Peter, but he then wants to leave the car on travel on his own. So Deputy Banks, the one who is having a relationship, an intimate relationship, visits Julie and tells her about the attack on Lucy and to be careful. And Victor tries to comfort Julie, the little boy, by taking her hand, getting bigger on Lena's back. And meanwhile, Tommy, her boyfriend, who's the police chief in the town, watches Rowan, his fiance, dress in her bedroom, and he has a camera there, and is pissed that Simon was released to Peter. While this is going on, Tony, the manager of the bar, is upset because his brother has returned, and he hits him with the shovel and he falls but gets up. So Tony locks, and I believe his brother's name is Sergio. Tony locks himself in the cabin as the brother pounds on the door. Finally, the pounding stops, though. Then Tony gets out, but Sergio hits him with the shovel when he comes out and points a gun at him and wants to know where his mom is. And Tony says he died 2 years ago. Meanwhile, Simon visits Rowan again and says goodbye, but Rowan wants him to meet their daughter. And he sees her playing soccer, and he's happy. And then he goes over to Rowan's place. They kiss, and Tommy watches as they get intimate. Meanwhile, Camille sneaks out and goes to the Dogstar Lodge, and she poses as Alice. And she sees her first love, Ben, and says she's Lena's cousin. And Lena tells her to go home. And Camille leaves, and she's so upset. And Ben comes, and they start making out, Ben and Lena. But then Ben feels the scar on her back, and they stop making out in the washroom. Meanwhile, Julie goes to the store to get food for herself and Victor, and Victor goes to her obnoxious neighbor's place. He's been spying on them, rings the bell, and the neighbor invites him in. And we know, based if you've seen the return, that he is going to die. Okay, so that was the Monday night lineup. The following, Bates Motel, the return, a lot of stuff there. So this brings us to the Tuesday night lineup, Flash, iZombie, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So The Flash, episode 116, Rogue Time, dropped a little bit in the ratings from a 1.3 to a 1.2 with 3.33 million viewers. The Flash is in a different timeline now, which is pretty cool. So everything that you remember, he's revealing his identity to Iris, Cisco getting killed. This does not happen, though. We get other people getting killed in this episode and his identity being revealed in this alternate timeline. And Cisco tells him to get to the morgue. So he's missing out a full day of what happened. So the weather wizard, Mark Martin, wants revenge against Joe. And Wells tells Barry that he ruptured the time continuum. He went back a day and tells him he has to do everything the same as before. But, of course, Barry doesn't listen. He puts the weather wizard in one of the cells of the particle accelerator chamber. He changed things, and Wells is pissed now because he says something else cataclysmic will occur. And it does, because Captain Cold and Heatwave are taken to this mobster Santini, who put his gang down, and Cold assumes the title of the new Godfather. And meanwhile, Linda realizes Barry is not the one for her, that he's in love with Iris. So he breaks up with her and wants to know if Iris is. And so while this is going on, Barry wants to date Iris, but she says nothing has changed because she loves Eddie. So that doesn't happen. Meanwhile, Cisco is drowning his sorrows at the bar because he's had a run-in with Dante, his brother, at his birthday party at their folks' place. And Code's sister, Lisa, wants to buy Cisco a drink, is interested in him, kisses him. She lures Cisco to Captain Code. He wants more guns or Dante will die, and Dante is there, cuffed up. So Cisco designs more Code and Heat guns, even gives Lisa a gold gun. And then Code goes to Santini's brother's casino. Lisa is able to use her Code gun. But Flash takes Lisa and tells him to drop the gun. And Code says he will kill Cisco if Lisa is not released. And they leave. Meanwhile, one of the best scenes of the series is Eddie punches Barry and tells him to stay away from Iris. Then Code has one question for Cisco, who is Flash, and starts giving his brother Dante first-degree frostbite, and it will only get worse. So Cisco returns, and Snark let him go in exchange for Flash's identity. So see, an identity is revealed not to Iris, but to Code. Cisco is ready to leave, but Wells shows him the particle accelerator room and tells him he's like a son and not to do that. And money, the whole point behind attacking the casino is that the money is being transferred from the casino. And so Flash stops the robbery, transports Captain Cold to the woods, who says, it's good to see Barry again. And Flash tells him if he stays, he doesn't have to kill anyone, and or he will be put away if he goes after Barry's family and friends. And so Cold says his secret is safe for now. And so Barry lets Snart go. Meanwhile, Caitlin says Barry suffers from lightning psychosis. That's why he acts so strange. So Eddie and Iris are okay with him now. And then at the end, Reverse Flash, a.k.a. Harrison Wells, kills the reporter Mason Bridge for publishing a story on Wells' shady activities. And Reverse Flash also takes all information on Hiss and Wells that by the reporter. Also, interestingly, he kills the reporter just like he did Sisko in the previous episode by putting his hand through his body, thereby rupturing the flesh. Okay, so this brings us to iZombie, episode 102. Brother, can you spare a brain? And it dropped down in the ratings a little bit from a 0.8 to a 0.7 with 1.99 million viewers. Javier, a painter, is dead, and the paintbrush has been projected through his eye. So Ravi and Liv investigate, and Liv eats his brain. And as he's eating his brains, now Liv is more passionate. And basically she's decided to take up painting and stuff like that. Meanwhile, Liv has a bad zombie dream of the one on the boat, Blaine, who interestingly shows up in the morgue and wants to know what she wants with him. And he realizes he raged out at one point and went into full zombie mode when a human tried to rob him. And so Liv bonds with him. And then at one point, Blaine kills these mobster thugs, and Blaine changes a female that he picks up at the bar into a zombie too. And she's going to pay Blaine if she provides brains for him. So he's still a shady type of zombie character. Okay, so we find also that Javier, the painter, was having numerous affairs with people, but that his wife, Lola, was okay about it. So at the art exhibit, Liv sees Dino Rivera, and Dino attacks her, and she breaks his nose. And then a friend of Xavier's, or Javier's, Artie, was pissed he knocked up his daughter. And so Artie is covering up for Lola, the wife, who actually killed Javier. So he was leaving her to start a family, so Lola did it, so they bring Lola in at the end. And then Liv visits her ex-boyfriend, Major, and wants to hang out with him. She even kisses him, but Major stops her and tells her to go. So it's got a little bit of a soap element to it, but I also like the fact that it's like a procedural and that she solves crimes the weekend. Okay, finally, for the Tuesday night lineup, this brings us to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., episode 214, Love in the Time of Hydra. And it reached its it tied with its series low of 1.5. It dropped from a 1.6 with 4.29 million viewers. So Ward and Agent 33 are a couple. They abduct someone, the creator of Agent 33's nano mask, to fix it. But there's no way the mask can be removed. So he fixes it. Meanwhile, Mac takes Hunter to a room where Robert Gonzalez and other leaders are, played by Edward James Olmos, and they founded the real S.H.I.E.L.D., and they think Coulson is heading down the same path as Fury. And Bobby comes in, and Gonzalez basically says he's concerned about Coulson's behavior, and Bobby feels like he's been compromised. So Hunter is held there. Meanwhile, Coulson is taking Skye on a trip in the bus, and Coulson brings Skye to a safe house for people with powers, and Coulson has to pull her from duty. She will be contained there, and Simmons develops gloves to restrain her powers. And Coulson hugs her and then returns to base and tells Fitz that Skye is safe. Meanwhile, 33 assumes Skye's identity to make love to Ward, but Ward stops. And 33 says, there is no me. That Whitehall wiped it all away. But now 33 and Ward are going after Batsy. And 33 poses as Major Talbot's wife, Carla, to get him out. Talbot locks down the base, however, when he realizes it is a fake version of Carla and questions each of the females, but 33 already has changed her gender, finds Batsy in the cell, punches him out, and takes him away. And 33 and Ward take Batsy away, and 33 reveals her true face to Ward and says she's Kira, and Ward accepts her for who she is. And then they have Bocchi watching a screen, and it looks like they're brainwashing him. And so that's how that episode. Okay, so this brings us now to our Wednesday night lineup of Arrow and Supernatural. So Arrow, episode 317, Suicidal Tendencies. It picked up a little bit in the ratings. Yay for Arrow, from a 0.9 to a 1.0 with 2.78 million viewers. So let's play our Arrow theme song and then let's review it. Here we go. Lots happened here. Lila and Diggle get remarried. The minister doesn't show up. So Ray, who brings Felicity, is a minister and remarries them. And Felicity says she's happy with Ray. And a news story flashes. Arrow returns to killing, and it's Ra's al Ghul and his League of Assassins. And Ray believes in the story and wants to get Arrow apprehended. So he takes it upon himself to don the Adam suit and to seek out Arrow and bring him to justice. Meanwhile, Oliver wants Lila and Diggle to go on their honeymoon. They do, but Lawton is in the limo, a.k.a. Deadshot, and Waller interrupts their wedding. They need to extract Senator Kray from the Republic of Kasnia, and they have Deadshot and Cupid, two of the Suicide Squad, and Cupid was the female Arrow version who really liked Arrow, and now she likes Deadshot. So Felicity finds Ra's as Arrow, and Oliver arrows him, and they fight, but it's not Ra's. It's one of the League of Assassins, and Ra's is trying to persuade Arrow by killing people in Starling City. Meanwhile, Adam finds Arrow, IDs his face as Oliver, and Ray tells Felicity that he knows her secret. And Felicity says Oliver doesn't kill people anymore, but Ray still wants to bring them to justice. Meanwhile, we discover in a series of flashbacks, a.k.a. American Sniper, that Floyd Lawton has PTSD. He pulled a gun on his wife at one point, and his daughter is afraid for him. And Lawton was in the cell for doing that. And this special group posted his bail and will pay him handsomely for his skills. So Hive recruits him to kill Andrew Diggle, John's brother. So that's the backstory to Deadshot, which I really like. Okay, Felicity tells Oliver that Ray knows his identity, and he's going to reveal it, but Laurel protects Oliver, so Ray is going to seek out justice on his Diggle, Lila, Suicide Squad get in. They find Senator Kray, who pulls a gun on them, and Lawton gets injured, and the senator reveals mercenaries work for him, and he wants to be the president of the U.S. someday. So he's ready to blow everyone up. Deadshot prevents it. The bomb explodes with Lawton on the roof, unfortunately. Meanwhile, Oliver confronts Ray. Ray says he's going to stop him. And there's an attack at the Meltzer power plant, but Adam is there. He faked the 911 call. He attacks Arrow and Arsenal. They fight. Oliver incapacitates his suit, and Oliver is ready to shoot him, but stops and says Felicity chose him over himself. So, and Tim being Ray, so he should trust her. And then Dig at one point wants to leave Team Arrow, but then Lila has resigned from Argus, so he decides to stay. And Dig toasts Floyd Lawton, and they think he's died. I don't think he is. But then at the end, the mayor of Starling City gets arrowed to death by Maseo. So the plot thickens. Anyway, it's moving incredibly fast on this show. Okay, it looks like we have someone on the line. So, caller 909 area code, are you there? Hello? Are you there, caller 909? Hello? You're live with doctor number 14, caller 909 area code. Are you there? You're on the air. Okay. Well, we have put you up there to see if we can hear you. And you just faded out, so please call back, all right? Please call back, caller area code 909, and we'll talk further with you. Okay, what about Supernatural, episode 1016, Paint It Black? It went up there from a 0.6 to a 0.7 with 1.73 million viewers. So on Supernatural, let us play our theme song. Okay, so in Worcester, Massachusetts, a man is in a confessional and stabs himself with a candlestick holder, and his name is Terry Sloan. So the Winchesters investigate. Meanwhile, a couple who were at church come home, and at night, the wife, Lisa, comes at Frank, her husband, with the scissors and stabs him, and then a spirit leaves her body. So both men were at a confessional, and a sister is interviewed by Dee, and Crawley, meanwhile, brings the high priestess of the Grand Coven to his mother, and her name is Olive, and she's to be dealt with by Rowena, who punches her again and again. And at the end of that interrogation, Olivet is changed to a hamster by Rowena. Meanwhile, Dean goes to confession and says he was seeing multiple girls in the same day, and he's given prayers to say. But then he also discloses he doesn't want to die, but now he's very close to death. And then a spirit coalesces into a nun when Dean leaves the confessional. And the nun spirit possesses the priest, and he is killed. And then the nun is attacks Dean, and he's choked. But what happens is, we find out that the nun showed up 3 weeks ago. Her name's Bella. And Dean thinks it's her journal that needs to be burned. But Sam reads it and realizes her blood and bones have been painted into a picture. So that's the backstory. As Bella is attacking Dean and he's being choked, Sam burns the painting with Bella's figure on the canvas. And so she leaves the other nun and goes up in flames. So, again, it was a standalone type of episode. It was pretty good, but nothing to write home about. But I like the standalone episodes instead of, you know, focusing on Dean and the mark of Cain that he has and things like that. Okay, this brings us finally to the Friday night lineup of three shows, Grimm, Love, Monkeys, and Helix. And all of them were very good. Grimm, which by far was the best of the three because it had such a surprise WTF moment that I hope to surprise you with as I review it. So here is the Grimm Season 2 theme. So episode 415, Double Date, it hit its all-time series low from a 1.1 to a 1.0 with 4.94 million viewers. So Captain Sean Renard is bleeding from his former gunshot wound, and he keeps on recalling the residual effect of reliving his being shot over and over again. And they have a book that the mom cast a spell from, and only a hexen bee can break the book-binding spell. And Juliet, who's been sleeping in her car, goes to Sean, and so she can stay over there if she breaks the binding of the book with her blood. And so basically he gets her to cut herself so this blood spills on the book, and the book opens. And so that's what happens with that storyline. And so Juliet wants to read the spell book too, because that's what caused her to be a hexen bee. Meanwhile, a female goes to a bar, tells her woes, and she picks up this guy and says her husband left her, meets a guy there, Cody, who takes her back to her condo. They're ready to have sex, and then the husband comes in and points a gun at the man, and he gives him $500 and leaves, but he leaves his phone there. So Cody is attacked by the female who's leaving the condo all of a sudden, and he's burnt to death by her. And so Nick, Hank, and Wu trace the phone to the condo, the phone that was supposed to be on Cody. The place is vacated. Wu finds the phone and gets a print, and it's Linus, the husband, print, who has a number of priors. And the condo was rented by an attractive woman. So Linus is working with his wife, Stacy, at the scam. And they're both Wesson, and they both are trying to get money out of people. So, and these are worm Wesson. They travel in pairs, and decapitation is the best way of getting them. So Monroe poses as a target for Stacy. He runs into her. Stacy takes him to her place, but Linus breaks in and holds Monroe at gunpoint, and Linus takes his wallet, but there's only $22 in it. And then Linus takes off with Nick in pursuit, and then we change. We see the WTF moment, Linus changing into a woman. WTF. So Linus and Stacy are the same thing. So the Wesson is both male and female when they vogue. That is why they only are able to kill the males, and they never find the females, at least in the Grimm text. So Rosalie is going to give Nick a potent batch of testosterone delivered, which needs to be delivered by crossbow, so that they can arrest Linus as he has a criminal record. So Nick finds Stacy. Hank arrives too. He turns Wesson and his arrow, and then he changes into Linus. He's in pain and is arrested, but he can't change into Stacy anymore. And he signs the confession, and he's going to jail. I thought that was pretty cool. I thought that episode was pretty cool. Very cool. Okay, let's deal with Helix, episode 211, Plan B, which dropped in the ratings a little bit from a 0.19 to a 0.18 with 570,000 viewers. Well, it looks like the Navy is going to basically use this X-gas on the entire island to contain it, and that is Plan B. That is the title of the episode. So while that is going on, Peter has this baby that he's taken from one of the surrogate mothers that he's going to raise. And he really doesn't want to leave anyone. He doesn't want anyone to leave the island. Meanwhile, Amy is going to have Sari's baby implanted in her so she can be immortal. And then Alan sees Jules, and Jules tells him about the new version of Narvik that Ilaria will release, unless she gives them an infertility compound. And Langtree is still alive, killing people. So, Alan's alternative to Plan B is to make a red sap antidote to the virus and then negotiate their way out. But meanwhile, Peter loosens Kyle's bond so he can get out and kill Alan. Meanwhile, Alan is drawing Soren's blood to see what makes him better. And Alan deduced that Soren's blood is special, so a cure can be manufactured. Meanwhile, Peter savagely knifes the guard that was attacked by Kyle, and then he holds the baby with bloody hands. And Peter is planning something with Anne. Meanwhile, Amy is put under so they can implant Sierra's fetus in her, and Sarah is ready to kill Amy, but Jules prevents it. And then Amy recovers, and the procedure was successful, as she now has silver eyes. And then Peter tells Alan to see Jules in the botany lab. Kyle is there and nooses Alan and tells him he created the virus on the island, but Alan denies it. So while this is going on, Soren takes a hypo with the tree sap antidote, injects Kyle in the leg with it, and cuts Alan loose. While this is going on, the Marines put on gas masks as the plane starts spraying X gas all over the island. The Marines start dying along with Amy, and we find out that Amy is not immortal. Sarah faked the eye pigmentation by injecting something directly into the eye itself to make it silver gray. And so then Anne gives Peter an axe and tells him he has to do what he must. And Julie retrieves Mother, the root from the red sap tree, because it's dead due to the gas. So now there's no cure because the whole island has been sprayed with that X gas. Oh, no. Okay, finally, 12 Monkeys, episode 111, Shonen, where it did drop a little bit in the ratings from a 0.26 to a 0.22 with 727,000 viewers. In 87, Ramsey is in Tokyo and Cole is right behind him. And Cole wants to stop Leland going and asks him where the virus is. And Cole says the virus is in the frozen corpse that he was shown. And Goring's son is interrupted by Ramsey, who fights with Cole. Knives are given to both of them. Cole is stabbed and is dying. It's his last jump. And Leland wants Ramsey to live. So he's put in the Fuchu prison. And over the years, in the 80s and early 90s, you get notes from this person called Olivia, who calls him the Traveler and who wants to join up with him. So in 1995, Ramsey is released. I really like this because they develop a sort of like a timeline for Ramsey. And he goes to Virginia where he meets with Olivia. And so 16 years later they fund Olivia and Ramsey, the Markridge Company that develops the virus, and it's run by Goring. And Olivia and Ramsey meet with Leland. And as I said, they invest in the company. In 2014, Jennifer Goings is in a mental hospital. Leland visits her. She wants to go, but he hugs her and says it's best she stays. And then in 2015, Leland is murdered by Cole. Cole destroys the virus in the night room. The virus is also lost in Chechnya. And then Oliver Peters is going to be the one to recreate it. So they have a working virus, and the next steps are comes the plague, as well as the coming of the 12. And then Jennifer is taken to Olivia's compound in Virginia, and she tells her she doesn't need to run anymore, that she can be protected and she can be a daughter again. And then we go to 2043, where Katerina wants to transport Cole to 2015, and he splinters. And Marcus is giving up. He says he believed in her. Marcus and the group leaves, but Katerina remains. And Cassie returns to her place and finds a bleeding Cole on the floor, and he says he knows who the witness is. So, again, a lot of time stuff happening, but it was really cool to have that whole Ramsey timeline there. Okay, we are done. We may not have as many shows to review next week because I'm going to a conference starting Tuesday night, a pop culture conference where I'm going to be reviewing from an archetypal perspective the movie Maleficent in New Orleans. And so that's going to be really cool. So I'm going to be there Tuesday through Sunday. So happy Passover, happy Easter, and we will be back next week, our first show of the month in April. So until then, sleep tight and take care.